That's Jimmy, he's Reel 5. Jim, you were just in the East End loading up some ships, and there was a pub or a docks there or something.
Yeah, well, like I say, I didn't just remember whether it was East or West Indian dock, but there was a pub on the dock. And, of course, there was red caps on the dock gates and everything, and we couldn't go out. We had to stay there. But every night when we finished, of course, the stevedores were on patchwork. And the faster we went, the more money they were earning.
Yeah.
So every night when they finished, they had a collection for us and gave us money so that we could go in the pub and have a drink.
Yeah. Just out of interest, my grandfather was a stevedore in the East London docks.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether he may have been one of those, who knows, one of those at that time.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was there. So then you, some stage, you go back to your battalion.
Yes. I think it was about 10 days or fortnight, and then, of course, everything was loaded, and we went back to the
Yeah, and this must be getting on. D-Day's happened. This must be getting on to which parts of June would you say this is now, Jim?
Oh, I would say somewhere about round about the 15th or something like that.
Yeah. And do you now move to somewhere from where the battalion is?
The battalion went before I did. I was left, well, not by myself.
Mm.
There was so many of a rear party that didn't go till about a fortnight after the battalion.
Right.
The battalion, I think, went into cages somewhere around Purfleet or somewhere like that, if I'm correct.
Mm.
I'm not saying I am. We went to divisional headquarters.
Which was where, Jim?
Which at Moat Park in Maidstone.
Okay. But what date did you actually go over to France?
I would say roughly it was about a fortnight after the battalion.
Yeah, now they would have gone...
They went on the 25th.
Yeah. So you would have gone...
Early
August.
Early July.
Sorry, early July. And, all right, so just describe that and what happened when you started to go and prepare to go.
Well, I had my Cardinal Lloyd, and also there was one of the gun crew left with me.
Yeah.
We weren't left on our own, there was two men to each carrier. And what it was, where each anti-tank gun had two Cardinal Lloyd carriers, the one towing the gun went and the other one stayed behind for the rear part.
Yeah.
And at the time I was driving second carrier, the number 6 gun, which was under Sergeant French. We were all loaded, we were all ready. We didn't do a lot, it was just like a muster parade every day, so that they knew you were there. You got your meals.
Yeah.
And then When we went into a staging camp somewhere near Perthley.
Yes.
That area.
Yeah.
And then we went down, and we went down to the docks, and you put on the bolts and everything, and we went out into the solent, and I think we were hanging about there a couple of days.
So you went from Portsmouth?
Yeah, I think it was Portsmouth.
From Portsmouth?
Yeah.
Do you remember the boat you went on?
I don't, but it was one of them Yankee Liberty boats.
Yeah. You didn't, yeah.
I can always remember that right at the front of the boat, of the prow, on either side, was the latrines.
Yeah.
And anything you did just went over the side and into the sea.
Oh, right.
And I'll always remember that we were right down in the bottom of the hole. And sleeping on hammocks. Well, every time I jumped on the hammock, I went over the top on the other side.
Yes.
And of course, meal times, which you climb up two or three decks to get on the top to get a food.
Yeah.
And one sea time, I've never been a lover of this stuff, I never was. But it was pink salmon and mayonnaise, vegetable salad in mayonnaise.
Yeah, yeah.
Tin stuff.
Yeah.
You know. So, of course, we go up and we get this. And come back down, had a tea, and just a short time moving about. Oh, I had to fly back up then for a just sick as a dog. Oh, dear.
But was the boat bouncing around a bit then as well?
Yeah, the boat was bouncing.
Yeah, yeah. And had you been on the sea much before?
I had a few rough crossings from Stranraer to Belfast and Larne.
Earlier on, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd had a few rough crossings, but I think it was this vegetable salad in there.
The food.
I didn't like it,
yeah.
I ate it because if I didn't eat it, I'd have got nothing else.
Yeah. So you're on the boats in the channel, presumably waiting to go across.
Go across, yeah.
And then the order comes, or to you're going.
The bells start ringing.
You're moving across. How many people are on the boat with you? Are they all from the East Lancs, people that are on there?
Well, they were more or less all from the division.
From the division.
From the division. 53rd. The divisional rear party.
Got it. Okay.
And I can always remember it was early, very early in the morning when we got to the beaches. And of course, the thing was that first of all, the carriers were loaded, lowered over, and put in. And then you to go over the side on the nets. And 1 minute, the landing craft was there, and you just stepped onto it. And the next, it was 70 or 80 feet below you.
With the tide rising and falling.
Rising and falling. And you'd only to go so far down this net for the boat to come up. And I'll always remember, I don't know who it was, but the bloke that went down before me went like two rungs too far down this net, the boat come up and bang, and his legs.
Really?
And he was whipped up and over the other side and down and away back to England.
What, crashed his legs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds dangerous anyway, dangerous yeah. occupation, that.
Well, the thing is, yeah. 1 minute the boat's there, and next it's 70 yeah. people yeah. over.
Right, but what about travelling over the channel? Did you, can you remember about anything going over?
Well,
any sights you were seeing?
The thing is that we was right down in the bottom of the hole, so
okay.
you could hear the...
Yeah.
gunfire and the bombs and the shells and that, but you
nothing to be seen.
No real recollection of what was going on.
No. So you got to the other side, you're going down these nets.
Going down the nets. We got on the landing craft, and as we set off, we went right under. I think it was the war site, the battleship. And we were just going as it fired a broadside. The damn thing nearly went all, you know, and we were tossed about like nothing on earth.
Yeah. And the noise? Then, what about the noise?
Oh, the noise was terrific.
Yeah.
And we carried on and we were going in. And all of a sudden, we slap bang into another landing craft. A Yankee one that should have been way over on Utah or Omaha.
Yeah.
And this bloody partner, what the hell's going on? You know?
Yeah.
And he'd come right across the front of us, and of course, we'd give him a belt.
Yeah.
And then we went in and hit the beach and the front came down and we just drove off. And of course, like, all hell was still let loose. I mean, it wasn't as severe as D-Day,
but
there was still a lot of muck about.
But when you came off that boat with the front down, you went straight onto sand or did you have to go through water?
Oh, you had to go through water.
Through water.
Oh, yeah.
And how deep was the water at that stage?
I'd say roughly about 3 or 4 feet.
Yeah. And you drove a...
Gardner Lloyd.
And it's 3 or 4 feet deep. Yeah. But it was all okay and your waterproofing worked.
Waterproofing worked and everything.
Yeah.
I can always remember. And, I mean, like any soldier, we didn't like the Red Caps. But I can always remember going up that beach and the Red Cap stood there directing traffic and as one fell hit, wounded or anything, another one just got up and took his place.
Yeah.
And I had a good respect for him after that.
Yeah. Where did you land?
On Juno Beach, not so far from my romantic.
Okay. I know, because I know that the battalion on the 24th, 25th
yes.
landed at Courcelles.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether you landed at the same place.
Well, possibly we did.
Possibly, yeah.
And I can always remember the first place we went. We finished up in a field at Bayou overnight.
Yeah, because you've got to catch up or find the rest of the battalion.
And we was in this field overnight, and that was where we'd take all the breathers off that we'd sealed up.
Yeah.
So you can only go so far.
Yeah.
We'd to take all the breathers off that we'd sealed up for coming through the water.
Yeah. Take off your waterproofing.
Things. You didn't take it all off, but you took the breathers off and all that, but let the differential and the gearbox.
And where was that Bayer, did you say?
That was a Bayer.
Right, okay.
Yeah. In a field.
And that was the first night you'd got there?
That was the first night we got there.
Okay.
And then we moved up and we got to Air Echelon, which was where everything went up to the battalion from.
Yes.
And we stayed there overnight. And then the day after, well, the night after, I should say, we to go up when the ration wagon and ammunition and that went up to join the battalion. And I joined my gun crew at Bougie.
At Bougie.
Yeah.
And this is about early July. That was with support company.
That was with support company, the anti-tank. We were in a position, being anti-tank guns, we was put in positions with companies.
Yeah.
We weren't with support company.
Yeah.
We was with support company when we're all together.
Mm.
But in Bougie, we were attached to C Company. I mean, Bougie was a place where you couldn't move in daylight. You just couldn't move. Because the minute they saw anything, they let fly at it. And our gun, when I got down there, you went down the road, and on the left was a church.
Yeah.
And at the other side was like a bar. And the gun was in there. They'd made a hole in the wall to fire the gun through. And like I say, couldn't do anything in the daylight. Everything had to be done in the dark.
Yeah.
And up the road from where we were, I'd say probably 100 to 150 yards, there was like a bend and a big tree. And every night a spandrel crew used to come there and be firing all night.
Yeah.
Right here. And I always remember Sergeant French. It had gone on a couple of nights or so, and took a bead on this tree. And the next night, when the spandrel started firing, he put a couple of 18.
Right. At him. Right, and he got them, shot them, killed them.
Yeah.
But when you got to Bougie, Jim, they'd been there. Because they arrived 2 weeks earlier than you.
They'd been to Chew.
Yeah.
And Granville.
Yeah. But what were they saying? And there must have been conversations going on. You've just arrived, and you want to know what's happening, what it's like, what's been going on.
Yeah.
Any stories being told?
Well, There was one story. I've just forgot whether they said it was at Shew or at Granville, where the first casualty that the anti-tank platoon had was a Lance Corporal, Johnny Price. And he'd been shot with one of their own men coming back, you know, in the dark, when he'd been out to a gun and coming back, but this bloke had shot him. And they were telling us all about that, and where he'd shot him.
It was known.
Oh, it was known.
Yeah, but I suppose that, that sort of thing is accidental. It happens in warfare, it happens all the time.
It happens in warfare because, bear in mind, this is getting way beyond the limit. But there was another casualty like that in Antwerp.
Well, Antwerp is later on. Maybe if we want to talk about that later, we'll go on to Antwerp. But at the moment, you're at Bougie. And so, yes, the Spandau, this gun, you just told that story. What about the rest of Bougie, or is it now you're moving on somewhere else?
Well, the rest of Bougie, I can always remember. We had... I don't know whether you've heard about him or you've read about him in the regimental history, but we had a sergeant, well, he was a full corporal, and he finished up a sergeant major, Charlie Atten.
Yeah, I've heard his name.
He was brilliant with the piggots. Do you know what meant, Charlie?
Sorry, do I?
So aggressive.
No.
We was in Bougie, and we'd moved the gun, and we'd gone round, like round, you know, like round the village.
Yeah.
And we was in a hedgerow, in a field, and Charlie Atten, a full corporal, and his mate, a lance corporal, came through us, going out in front in a listening, find out patrol.
Yeah.
And they went across this field, and I'm not sure, just sure, whether it was the first edge or the second. And the lance, his mate, the lance corporal, got up to look over the edge and got it smack between the eyes.
Right.
And Charlie had to leave him there and come back on his own.
But he was dead, presumably.
Oh, that man was dead.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he was dead.
Yeah.
And when Charlie came to us, he was raging. I think literally that day they took the journey of the home by himself.
Yeah.
It was in such a rage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was after that that no matter wherever any German tanks or anything, Charlie was there with the piggots.
Yeah.
And he put them to flight.
Yeah. Yeah. So Bougie, this is in and around Bougie. So what next, Jim?
And then we pulled out from Bougie, and if I remember right, we went to a place called Maidenvale.
Mondreville?
Mondreville, for 2 or 3 days rest.
Moon?
No, that was after Moon.
Okay.
Moonvale.
Yeah, that's probably the place.
And there was one laughable incident while it happened. Of course, we were going along the battlefront in close proximity. I mean, there were buildings burning and shells and mortar bombs coming over and everything. And of course, it was pitch black night time. And all you had to follow was a teeny weeny little pinprick of a light on the differential of the vehicle in front of you.
Yeah.
And we're traveling along, and all of a sudden this carrier in front of me stopped. And next minute, talking through the side, I mean, a garden lead, you didn't sit down, you had to sit over the top, you
know. Yeah.
And talking to me from the side was a lad, a Blackburn lad, called Busty Moore. And he was driving the garden lead in front of me.
Hmm.
And he says, Jim, there's nobody in front of me. We're on our own.
Yeah.
Well, I looked behind and there were remainder following me.
Hmm.
So, I got out and I said, what's the name? We lost them. Where were they? Anyway, when we made our way back, I don't know whether you know about this or you've experienced it or not, but they had teeny weeny little lights that they used to put in the edge wall.
Mm-hmm.
And if they wanted you to go straight forward, they were both green.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted you to turn left, the right one was red, the left one was green.
Mm, I see.
And if they wanted you to turn right, it was the other way.
Yeah.
But when we went back and found, he'd followed bloody glowworms, hadn't he?
Glowworms?
Glowworms.
Oh, right. Yeah. So where were you?
Well, we'd retrack and go back a few hundred yards and turn left and get up on the correct route.
But you could have been anywhere.
Oh, we could have been anywhere. We could have been right in the middle of Germany.
Yeah. Night time, you don't know where you are.
You don't know where you are. There's fires and shells and mortar bombs and everything.
Yeah.
And there's Busty. It's on the floor.
So after that, so now he's...
Well, after that, to my recollection, when we had this 2 or 3 days rest at Rudenvale, whatever it was called, and then from there, we went to a place where we called it Hill Long Long Turn. Now, whether it was or not, we don't know.
Yeah, I mean, all of that.
Talk of a hill 112.
Yeah, all of that fighting around that area, which was west of Caen.
It was a place called Gavras.
Yes, Gavras. But Hill 112 was central to all of that fighting.
Yeah. Well, we went, and we was on the back slope of this big hill.
Mm.
Now, over the, it was high cornfield, and it was littered with tanks, British and German, burnt out, and the Germans, it was a case of one time we had it, and 2 or 3 days they had it.
Yep.
It had gone on like that.
Yep.
A week, I can understand.
Yeah.
And the Germans were dug in and were living under our tanks with these dead charred bodies in when they burned up.
Mm.
And there was also quite a few, you could tell them were bodies, but they were burned beyond any recognition whatsoever.
Would they be tank people?
Yeah. And they were just put in these shallow holes, and well, in some cases they were covered with straw.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
And I can always remember there that battalion, the SEAL wanted a new battalion headquarters. He wasn't happy with what was there. And some RAs came with an armoured bulldozer. And they were bulldozing this new headquarters in, like, the, in the bank, you know, like in the hillside. And there was a big concentration of shelling and mortar bombs and everything came over. And the CO was slightly wounded. Major Larch had a